At camp, they called me Jason, and I had not seen the movie, but I kind of was sure that this was not really a good thing. It's 1983. I had only recently escaped special education because they had finally invented the thing that was wrong with me, and it turned out not to be a special education thing. But I was kind of in the protective care of guidance counselors, and they were always looking for what's the next thing that we can apply Joe's weird talents to. And the science fair didn't work. Beekeeping club did work, but it took 30 years. And finally, they sent me to camp, and they sent me to the National Conference for Christians and Jews Youth Leadership Institute, which was held at Marlow Ridge out in western Maryland. It's actually a Lutheran camp that they would rent for this. And it was sort of a diversity training human understanding camp, and I did not want to go. It sounded horrible. I got my nickname as Jason because I was one of these kind of lurky people. I just like to lurk and hang around the edges of the room. I had a severe addiction that required AA batteries, which is I always had my headphones on. I always had my headphones on, and I always had my little brown Naugahyde case with 24 of the most perfectly designed mixtapes ever created. And so I went to camp with my lurky headphones on and slouching around and being grouchy, and I didn't like it. And the other kids in the camp were a complete insane mix to me because I grew up in Skaggsville. I was used to Howard County. My school system was so white that I was convinced for a while that Soul Train was science fiction. And they put me into this camp where they brought in kids from all over Baltimore. You had, like, Gilman kids and the Catholic school kids and kids from the West Baltimore and here and there. And it was this very kind of amazing cultural mix that I was content to completely hide with my headphones in the corner looking grouchy. And my worst fear is that I had one little hang up. And when my first night came around, I'm like, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I'm going to be fine. And it's not what you think. I don't wet the bed. But when I woke up at about 3 a.m. in the middle of the woods, tangled up in briars in my sweatpants, I realized, oh, it is going to happen. I'm going to go and sleepwalk every night in this camp, and they're going to think I'm crazy. And they already thought I was crazy because I was lurky and I always had my headphones on. They called me Jason. I didn't know what that meant. My cabin captain was a guy named Kemp Slaughter. He was a psychologist in the Baltimore school system. And he kind of took a special interest in me. He knew that there was something going on with this kid. So he just kind of watched over me. And, you know, the first night I woke up in the brambles, the next, it was not so bad. I got back to my cot, and I get up the next morning, and I'm covered with cockle burrs up to my waist. But no brambles. I knew I'd been out because I had my shoes on, and that meant I had gotten up in my sleep, put my shoes on, dutifully walked out the door without a flashlight into mountainous countryside in western Maryland where we had cliffs running the whole length of the camp. And I wasn't sure, you know, like when I'm asleep and I'm out walking, it's not like I'm doing this thing. I actually have a guidance system operating. It's just somebody else at the controls. And I just was very anxious about it. It kind of made me lurk even more. But Kemp Slaughter was destined to drag me out of it because my other secret place at that camp was there is a place over that mountain at Marlow Ridge where the power lines come through. And they're the huge high-tension ones with the giant pylons there. And then it sweeps down into the meadows and the farms there. And if you go out at about 5 a.m. before the sun comes up, the cloud deck is below you, but you can hear all of the farm animals. Just these sounds just filter up from nowhere. And it was just the most magical place. And overhead, the power lines would crackle because these are 50 to 80,000 volt lines. So I would sneak out there in the morning, and that was kind of my reset place. And probably the third day I went down there and I found Kemp sitting on a rock there. And he said, hey, you like to get up here and look at this too. And I said, yeah, this is kind of like a peaceful place for me. And one of his specialties in the Baltimore school system was that he taught meditation practice and about being reflective to help kids that were kind of problem kids, which I think is why he latched onto me. And I had had this sort of other alarming thing, which is he had started announcing after the first night that every morning when we would get together at the mess hall, he would say, just so everybody knows, there's been some sightings of a bear. At night, you want to make sure you don't leave your cabin. There's this bear wandering around. It could be dangerous and all that. Well, this scared the crap out of me because I'm thinking, I'm asleep. I'm going to get killed by a bear in my sleep, and they're going to wonder why I was, like, in my, you know, in my, my sweatpants covered with cockle burrs and then being torn apart by this bear. But as I was talking to Kemp, you know, he said, you know, he says, I think you have a secret that you want to tell me. And I said, no, I don't. But the batteries had run down on my Walkman, so I kind of felt communicative. And I said, well, no, I don't really have a secret. And he goes, you do have a secret. He goes, you know that you're the bear, right? And I thought, what? He goes, you know, when I announce that there's a bear in the woods, that's you. Because he's this very light sleeping cabin captain who sleeps in my cabin, and when I would get up and loudly put on my shoes and get dressed and get ready to go out to roam in the woods and come back covered with cockle burrs, he started getting up and following me just to make sure I was okay. And he would follow me around. He said, yeah, I was a little worried when you would get near the cliffs, but you seemed to have good sense about that. I was a bit concerned when I kept finding you on the roof of the girls' dorm. Mainly because it was kind of a big parkour leap to get from the rock outcropping to the top. But again, you seem to be in control of it. And, you know, I was really embarrassed because this is that age in youth when you're not really engaged with the world. You think everything about you is weird and gross and horrible and everybody will not like you when they find out. And he just said, you know, I'm going to keep an eye on you. You might want to hide your shoes. And I started hiding my shoes, and that actually kind of worked because instead of going and bumbling around, I would just wander around my cabin looking for my shoes, which, you know, all the roommates in the cabin were just, I don't know what he's doing. He's, why is it, Joe, what are you doing? I'm like, I got to get my shoes. I need my shoes. Why do you need your shoes, Joe? It's 2 a.m. I just need my shoes. But while I was talking to him, we just started talking about the things that I like to talk about and will ramble about forever, like bees and electricity and weird stuff. And we're sitting under these power lines, and I pointed out that the crackling sound you could hear from them all the time, that's electricity leaking off of that. And I said, there's this really neat trick you can do where you come out with a fluorescent tube and hold it in the air at night and it'll light up. And he said, that's really cool. You should get everybody in the camp to follow you out. And being lurky, I wasn't going to try that. But I did anyway. The following night, I got everybody in the camp. We raided all the fluorescent bulbs out of the cabin so that when we came back, we couldn't find anything. Climbed up to the top of that mountain, and everybody's, what's Jason doing here? I'm like, I'm not Jason. What's Jason doing? I'm like, no, seriously, wait. Now you get up right here. You hear that crackling sound? That's like electricity leaking in the air. It's dark. We've all hiked through this thing. And I said, watch. And I raise that fluorescent tube up in the air and give it a little wave, and it lights up. And everybody's like, oh, my God. And 2 dozen other fluorescent tubes go up in the air, and they all light up. And at that point, my nickname in camp changed from Jason to Dolby because I'd blinded them with science. And there's a little caveat, and I may be going kind of long, but there's a little caveat to this also, in that Kemp Slaughter was one of those people where camp is a thing I didn't want to do because it seemed stupid and bug infested and hot, and everything came in a can, and the just was weird and scary. And they and at Camp Marlew Ridge, they have millipedes this long that if you look away for 2 seconds, they're all over you like leeches. I didn't want to do camp, but the third year at camp, I came up and Kemp asked me, we were sitting around talking about something. He goes, you've got a secret you want to tell me, don't you? And I'm like, no. He goes, something you just figured out this year. And I'm like, no. And he goes, does it have anything to do with the fact that you're wearing a magenta muscle shirt and a perfectly color-matched pair of espadrilles? And I'm like, I'm fashionable. And he said, yeah, but I think you're also gay. And I looked around like, oh, my God, why did I wear the magenta espadrilles with a magenta top? it's matchy matchy. Everybody knows. And he said, it's okay. This is an open opportunity for you. You can tell people. And it was not my school. It was not my family. It was not my home or my church or my surroundings. And he had me tell people this scary thing about myself, which turned out to be okay. I told kids that I had met there, and they said, well, that makes sense, because you act really grossed out when we talk about a lot of the stuff we talk about. And I said, well, you guys are disgusting. And the thing was, I stayed with that camp, and in fact, when I graduated from it, I actually went back as a counselor. And the change for me, though, is several years after the program got defunded, it kind of shut down. I lost touch with people, and I found out that Kemp had died. And I knew how he had died, and it was something that hadn't really struck me until I went down to D.C. when they were doing the Names Project quilt. And I got out into the middle of it. And all I could think of, somebody who knew my secret and made it safe for me to be out there. And so I came home, and I got out my trusty sewing machine, and I produced a perfect 3-by-6-foot portrait of that cut in the mountains where the power lines came through. And I have never sent it in, because I can't. Because I'm never sure that there's not a bear out there. And so I keep it folded up under my bed. And at night when I go to sleep, I know the bear is me. And it's okay. I'm not going to attack anybody. Thanks.